There's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
Make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Beatles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this, and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching?
On. But by all means, use some discretion. For God's sake, you're a member of Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Well, thank you for meeting me. It's been an in-depth project we're on here, tracking these movements of 007 through all these different elements. Most recently here in Skyfall, I'm here with James, not Bond, Mosia. Yes. Thank you for sitting down with the clone here as we try to wrap our heads around the magnificence, I guess I would say, that Skyfall is. Skyfall being the third part of this Daniel Craig saga of the James Bond series. Now, since this is the first time I'm talking to you, tell me a little bit before we get into Skyfall of how, you know, what's your earliest Bond memory? What was your first Bond film? How did you become part of the whole Bond family, if you of fans, let's put it out there?
I saw a lot of the earlier ones with, Pierce Brosnan growing up, just because he was kind of in theaters.
He was your first Bond-ish? Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
But then Casino Royale came out when I started getting into films and filmmaking in general.
Gotcha.
So that was kind of a cool experience to have.
Did that push you to want to watch the old, like the established, the classic Bond franchise? And how far back did you go? And what was it like going back? Because I can't even imagine what that must be like.
Yeah, it's an interesting experience, you know. Going back to, like, From Russia with Love, mm-hmm. which ties into some of the stuff they do, and like, well, later on, Spectre and whatnot.
Yeah, Inspector in this Spectre, the Spectre from this series. Because, I mean, Spectre has always existed in the James Bond world. Is that the implication?
I think so, yeah. They're kind of like the Hydra, if you will, of
gotcha.
The Bond universe.
Now, that in mind, we got a little taste of that in Quantum of Solace, which I think Quantum kind of representing the idea of a shadow organization. When we think of Skyfall, though, we didn't really have that sort of presence in the film. You know, we didn't have an entire organization, per se. It was really much more like Silva and his henchmen, it seemed to me.
Right.
And I think, in the next chapter, we'll find out how that all ties together. But did it still feel like that he was... Like, I almost got the feeling that with Skyfall, he could have been the top of the pyramid. You know what I mean? Like, if there was a Quantum... I almost got the impression that he probably installed them somewhere, you know what I mean? Without them even knowing it, you know?
That's true, yeah. I think even though, if you look even further back, looking at, like, Casino Royale, their presence is still felt there. They're kind of felt throughout the whole series, really.
Yeah.
Like, in the end with Mads Mikkelsen's character.
Yeah.
He's kind of just taken out of nowhere.
Yeah, the chief.
Yeah. And, you know, just by an unknown figure, which eventually ties into the whole organization of everything.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely, like, I feel like maybe this is because we're also watching this in a time where conspiracy theory is very commonplace, and the whole idea of, like, shadow governments and that there could be these sort of organizations that are everywhere. I mean, like, when we had Mr. White give us that almost introduction to the group in Quantum of Solace, when he says, you know, for one, we have people everywhere, right? I mean, it turns in, it's one of MI6's people is one of them. I definitely think that that makes it more, when you're watching Casino Royale and you see Lashif talking to this warlord in Africa, and he's kind of talking about, I guarantee X amount return on your investment and this and that. And it's that the idea that he's done this for a lot of other warlord types, like, you kind of get the feeling that he's piped into this thing that's much bigger than him.
Yeah.
And that he, for as impressive as he is for that movie, is really a very small part in that.
Right, I can see what you're saying.
And then Quantum seems like the thing. You know what I mean? Like, and I know later we kind of see that Spectre is a little bit different. I think, though, one of the ways that one of our other colleagues, Gomez, not Adams, put it was that, you know, if Spectre is the thing, Quantum is sort of like the junior league version, like the AAA, the minor league. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, though. Quantum felt like the way that Dominic Green talked about how they had to control the most powerful, the most valuable commodity on the planet. It seemed like they were pretty well established and that they had their hands on a lot of pies. And then we have this guy that by himself, you know, has his own island and is talking about how effortless it is to prop up and then topple, you know, a government or an economy. It's kind of like, I kind of felt like they definitely could have gone the route where it was all him. I don't know. How do you think that they paid off enough with Silva, that they did enough with his character to, or was that sort of a missed opportunity when we start looking at it in these terms?
I think they did a great job with Silva's character, especially when you consider the fact that his presence is felt throughout that film, and he doesn't show up until over an hour into it.
Right.
He's not on camera.
Yeah.
Right, but you can kind of still feel that the character's there, that he's this imposing threat that's already, like, blowing things up and causing problems for everyone. So I think that's kind of the mark of a good villain to have in the film.
Sure. I mean, it's arguable that where we start in this movie, in Skyfall, the first thing that's happening is something we've seen before. And it's basically, it's a staple of the espionage film genre, the idea that there's a list. There's a list with all the real names of all the undercover agents. I mean, this was the first Mission Impossible. That's what they were going after. It was called a knock list back then. And then even in movies after that, like, I remember in Al Pacino's The Recruit, they were talking about, like, you'll become a knock, a non-cover operative. I mean, I guess that's basically kind of what the 00s are. It's what James Bond is.
Right.
And so you're kind of wondering how much familiar territory we're going to be in when that's the opening sequence of the movie. And Silva, when he does show up, it's like there are no rules. This is, like, not even a game. This is just how crazy people exist. And that's what this life will do to these guys. Before Silva showed up, though, what are we thinking? Like, how would you characterize the sort of I think the whole atmosphere. Like, they knew about Quantum, they knew about people like Lashif, but
right.
It's almost like MI6 was a little content to, like, let some of these trails just go cold for a while.
It definitely, yeah, I can see them that, like, coming together in the plot.
Yeah, although then we always seem to start these movies literally in the middle of something, like in the middle of a mission. You know what I mean? I think Casino Royale started where he's waiting in the office for the turncoat MI6 agent to come back. You know, so it's like we have to just assume that there is, like, something that put that in motion. And his first thing is finding somebody, and M is totally like, just leave him, go get the list. You know, like, it was probably the first time that we see M be that cold as well.
Yeah.
Skyfall definitely has a little bit of something for anybody who likes the spy genre. But I don't know, man. There's something about it that makes it stand apart. And there, like, I can't always put my finger on it. Like, it's not just Javier Bardem. It probably has an awful lot more to do with Sam Mendes. You know, yeah, what I mean? I would say there's definitely each of the three films up to this point in the series have a very distinct feel from the other ones, you know? And I almost think it would be a neat idea if it stayed as a trilogy, that you have like these three different stories told by three different directors, and that this one, I mean, Casino Royale is, I still think, my favorite, even though Skyfall is amazing.
Skyfall, I think, is visually the best film of the series.
Yeah.
But I think Casino Royale has like my favorite story and everything, because there's an hour of them kind of just playing poker in the middle of the film, and it's really entertaining to watch. It's not boring at all. Like, there's a whole scene where he gets poisoned. During the game, and just the poker in general.
Even the way the poker was shot, like, you don't have to know poker. It's like they did it like almost like shows like The League, where you don't have to really be following football, but you get why what these guys are doing in their fantasy league and how it's affecting their real life is hilarious, you know?
It's like what they say in the film, like how when you're playing poker itself, you're not playing the cards, you're playing the other people. That's kind of what they were focusing on, was they were focusing on the characters rather than what they were doing on the table.
And there was no dynamic like that in Quantum. You know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing. It's like Quantum feels like a speed bump between these two. And then, I mean, Skyfall transforms itself a couple times throughout the movie, right? So it starts out with the mystery, the knock list gets out, you know, and they don't know who's doing it. You even have some hacker stuff happening, like whenever they go to look at their computers, there'll be the thing that pops up with M's face and think on your sins, which I think has got to remind you a little bit also of Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men, right? Because he's sort of like a biblical level of death in that movie. So all of a sudden he's going, remember, you know, think on your sins. And then when we finally meet him, it changes for a little while too, because there's like a chase movie where we're chasing him and trying to stop him. And then the third part of the movie is this whole, we're booby trapping the shit out of a fortress and now you got to come find us. Right. You know, and each part feels almost like it could have been expanded to be a movie by itself. Skyfall actually feels like a trilogy in one film.
They do a lot in that.
Sometimes I didn't realize, I definitely didn't realize that almost until just now as I was saying it. So that's kind of one of the fun things about talking about movies like this, I think, is all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, that is true. What did you think of of actually Silva's introduction? I mean, he kind of almost has two introductions throughout the film. When he introduces himself to Bond, there's a lot that happens in that sequence. Like, first we have him coming down in the elevator, which, like, visually it's sort of like this, here comes the devil descending into hell to meet the newest arrival. You know, like, hey, you just got here. Let me tell you where you are.
They have that whole long shot, which is where he's just giving this long monologue about the rats.
Teaching the rats to eat rats.
Yeah, and only two left.
Yeah, so, like, I guess his grandmother had an island, and a ship came over that had rats, and they infested the island. They were eating all the coconuts. And you have to teach them to climb the... I forget how they... Oh, you put them all into a barrel. That's what it was. Like, they had to, like, catch as many as they could, put them in a barrel, and then just leave them in there for, like, a month. And that's what it was. He said they buried coconut in a trap, like put a barrel under the ground and put some coconut in there, and all the rats went in, and eventually they all eat each other until there's only two rats left, and he goes, then you let those two out and they will kill all the other rats because now they don't eat coconut, they eat rat. And it's like, I guess, this whole setting up what he sees the sort of game between him and James to be for the rest of the film, now that he's revealing himself. But the reveal, like, I got the feeling that, like, I don't know if I should betray that I finally did watch Spectre now that we're having this conversation. Like, he almost has a little bit more of the bravado that I expected the Christoph Waltz character in Spectre to have. Right. You know what I mean? Like, I almost ventured to guess, knowing a little bit about what was going to come in Spectre, that were they setting up that, like, Silva was at Skyfall at some point as a child as well? That, like, he and Bond knew each other earlier in life, you know? I mean, I know that they weren't, you know, like, from the dialogue and from the way M describes who Silva really was. Obviously, that's not what they were doing. But I kind of got these momentary feelings where, like,
is he James's brother? Or, like, or is Skyfall an orphanage that they were both in? You know, like, because it seemed like there was this, I don't know, just, like, some kind of draw between them. And then a few minutes later, he does something that maybe explains what it was, where all of a sudden he's, like, pretty much sexually assaulting James. Right. Like, and I was like, that came out of nowhere. What the hell's going on?
It's kind of brilliant, though, on the writer's part, because it's, like, if you think about Silvo's character, he's kind of, he's all about, like, attacking someone personally. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't want to kill M, but he wants her to see the building blow up. He wants her to feel all these things about everyone that's dying.
Yeah.
And if you think of James Bond as a character over the years, he's kind of been known as a womanizer.
Right.
So to kind of take that aspect and flip it on its head.
Huh.
And see if maybe he's just, like, messing with him emotionally.
Yeah.
Just trying to get inside his head or under
his skin. Because he even says, he goes, oh, you're trying to remember your training now. You know, what did they tell you to do when something like this happens?
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, there's a first time for everything. And then when Bond says, what makes you think it's my first time? He, like, recoils. Like, yeah. It's almost like he's offended that, like, oh, fuck, you already touched somebody's dick? Ah, now I'm angry, you know? But it was very much, I mean, I just happened to, after I watched Skyfall for, like, the fourth or fifth time during this Bond binge that we're on here for the Hollow Knight Network, hollownight.podomatic.com, for anybody out there who's somehow found this and not realized what website you were on, or maybe got linked to it from a friend or found us on Facebook. Yes, we have a website. We also have presence on iTunes, so if you wanted to go over there and give us some ratings and reviews, that would be great too. Everybody can join in on the Bond binge. I don't even know where I was going with that now that I stopped to promote my to promote my whole network. Oh, well, after watching Skyfall all these times to prepare for this, No Country for Old Men happened to be on, and I happened to catch it, like, from the beginning. You know, like, you're flipping around, you're like, oh, No Country. You get there, and it's like he's just killing that guy on the side of the road. You're like, oh, all right. And watching Javier Bardem in that, and then watching Skyfall again afterwards, like, it does feel like probably at that time that was what Javier Bardem was getting hired for. They're like, all right, look, dude, you were horrifying in No Country for Old Men. We want that cold, menacing intensity for this, a Bond villain. But we're going to also let you, like, play around with it. So he's like, I'll be the same level, but I'm going to be a little gay. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to be a little, like, outside the box, you know?
Interestingly enough, I think No Country for Old Men was also shot by the same guy, Roger Deakins, that shot
Really?
Skyfall. So that could kind of play into it, the way that he's portrayed.
Yeah, yeah. And now,
I think,
is his nose being part of his sort of deformed face in Skyfall? I mean, that was part of the prosthetics and the makeup, because I've been trying to, like, I realize that I feel like I can't fully imagine Javier Bardem's face when I don't see it. Like, I kind of see his eyes and his haircut more in No Country for Old Men. So when there were all these close-ups in Skyfall where his face just looked odd and you can't tell what it is about it, and you just assume it's from all this, like, time of just being beaten up and all kinds of things that happened to him.
Right.
Being an MI6 00 agent or whatever. Eventually later when we see that he has this crazy facial prosthetic thing that he's wearing inside, that, again, how MI6 missed that when they were putting him in the cell, like, hey, he's got a big thing in his skull, you know, replacing the teeth and the mouth and the cheekbone that all dissolved by cyanide that somehow then didn't kill him. I also would like to know how he got out of that cell. That's one of those things that just gets, like, there's, like, a few things that just kind of, we just gloss over them for time cuts, but, like, he's, like, they see him stretching, and he, like, zips up his jumpsuit, and the guard says, like, are you going somewhere? And he just, like, smiles, and then all of a sudden, the next thing we know, he's out in the guy's uniform. So I kind of wonder, were there more of these inside people? Because he also had a couple other cops with him, or other cops and other people in cop uniforms, so maybe he had people, like, the way Quantum had people in MI6, maybe he had one of his people embedded in there somehow.
Yeah, it was very, like, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, true.
The cell was built and the whole
atmosphere of it. Yeah, and the sort of horror of his face without that prosthetic in there, and her face, and then Bond's face when he sees it. Like, I don't know, one of our other colleagues pointed out that, like, a lot of this movie is Bond seeing the way M is reacting to Silva starting to kind of think this could be me, you know, but I think we're also given a lot to show that M has a strange affinity for Bond as much as Bond has a strange affinity for her. Like, sure. There's a lot of them calling her mum in this film and the last film, which I know is sort of a British thing in general. You know, you just call, like, I guess women that are older than you, out of a sign of respect, call them mum, kind of. But I think the reason that it was so prominent in this one is really well illustrated by the way the movie ends and how he kidnaps her. Like, he sort of takes it upon himself to be like, it's his mission to make sure she's okay. I'm sure Tanner felt just as much, who every time I see him, all I think is pig fucker from Black Mirror. Like, you had to fuck the pig on Black Mirror. And I, like, yeah. Like, how did I forget that he, which was in Casino Royale, it was the guy from Rome. It was the guy who played Brutus in Rome. And I don't know what else he's been in. Oh, he was. He's also in Game of Thrones. He's Huster Tully. He's the one who winds up, like, fucking over the Blackfish in season 6.
Right.
Who is being held by the Freys. I forget. One of the Tullys. The one who married the really hot Frey daughter. That it was just like, what the hell is going on? You're a political prisoner for a whole season. That's from Game of Thrones. We do a Throne Games podcast that we haven't updated in a while, but if you're checking in on all the shows on the Hollow Knight Network, that's one of them that is out there. So, like, when someone just says Skyfall, like when I said, hey, I'm going to do a podcast about Skyfall, what are some of the first things that pop into your mind that you're like, oh my god, Skyfall instantly brings back, this scene pops in my mind, or this theme, or this moment with this character? What are some of the first things that come to your mind for you?
One of my favorite things about the film, I mean, the whole way the film is shot is beautiful, but especially the Shanghai scene.
Oh my god, how, like, did we not talk about that?
Yeah, the silhouette shot of just him and Bond and
Patrice. The guy's name was Patrice. Right. Yeah. Who was actually, in the beginning of the movie, it was like kicking the shit out of Bond. You're just like, man,
right.
There are all these guys that can fight just as well as Bond can now. Like, Bond is usually the guy who always just, like, throws two punches. He's the Captain Kirk of spy movies, right? Like, and now all of a sudden in these, he's, like, getting his ass handed to him a lot. I mean, damn. Let's not forget, he got his nuts crushed in Casino Royale. I mean, like, that was no joke. Anything else as far as, I mean, to me, like, now all I see is a bleached blonde Javier Bardem. You know what I mean? Like, even when I see the word Skyfall, which I made sure to get the Skyfall font for all of our collateral, because I'm like, I want this to look and feel good, you know, like the way this movie was. But even, like, I wasn't a huge fan of, I mean, I like Adele, but for some reason, the song from Quantum of Solace is, like, winning me over as my favorite of the themes so far. But after the second time I watched this, the way that first sequence ends and goes into the title sequence, I think, is just like, oh, man, it's, like, so smooth. And the way the beginning of her song comes in and her voice, it's like it all just starts to kind of meld together perfectly. And I think there's just, it feels like one of those movies that you're going to watch in a film school, you know what I mean? And everyone's going to be like, all right, this is the shit right here. If you can do this, we don't have anything left to teach you. You know what I mean? And, like, this is the way you have to be able to see something in your mind and then make it happen to make your mark in the industry or set yourself apart as a real, like, heavy hitter. I know one of our other colleagues who wasn't able to join us tonight, but will be joining us at some point because he has valuable information about Skyfall, did mention that Sam Mendes is a force to be reckoned with as far as being on set and working with. I feel like the only other people I'd heard of described in the same way as he was described to me are people like David Fincher, who are, like, psychotically meticulous and, like, we'll do something, we're doing this 50 takes until we get it right. Was there anything about Skyfall that you saw right away that kind of, like, set it apart visually besides, say, like, the silhouette scene, or just anything that he used throughout the film as, like, a technique? Or
there's a moment early on in the opening sequence, like the opening chase scene, with the crane and the train.
Mm-hmm.
And when Bond runs across the top of the of the crane and jumps down into the train. He like kind of fixes his cuffs.
Yeah.
It's a perfect Bond moment. Like yeah. just in like one shot. It kind of sums up the entire character. I thought that was brilliant.
And it's funny so because well. I feel like at the end he makes a comment about how Silva always has to make an entrance, you know what I mean? Right. When he's flying in with the music blaring. And it made me think, I'm like, well, wait, you kind of do that too. You know what I mean? But he does it in that more like that subtle, like, this is just in case any hot chicks saw me do that. You know what I mean? Like, anybody else, fuck you. All these guys are going to be running away. And he's like, I'd kill people like it's nothing. But,
yeah. It's like he cares more about how he looks.
Yeah. And that's thing. even in, you know, some of the scenes in Spectre too, like, it's almost like right always in the beginning after some major. He shouldn't have even survived that moment kind of feat. He's like, okay, brush it off, and now we could go and get a martini. Like, right. We're totally fine.
I think there was a moment when I was watching this. I watched this 3 times to get ready for these recordings, and there are always some iconic scenes for each film that stand out, and for me, there were a couple that really popped up right away that when I was watching it the first time, I'm going, oh, I can see why everybody says this is the best one. I would totally get that. Is there anything that you guys think of right off the top of the bat when I just say Skyfall that is sort of like moments that stand out either visually or dramatically or anything? Who wants to take it first?
The shower scene.
Oh, yeah. Wait, which one? The one where he's like realizing he still has a bullet in his shoulder? Or the one with the hot chick. Got it.
Yeah, the one with the hot chick. We'll go with that.
I like the scene where he's following the guy, the sniper. The way they shot that scene, I like.
In Shanghai with the glass yeah. building. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That I think when he fights him, and they're just in front of that window and the background keeps changing. That yeah. was when I said to myself out loud in my apartment by myself, like, oh, I see why they like this one. Like, I get it. And yeah, I am
then
right
if you notice,
there.
Hot chick is in the background watching them just getting moist.
Yeah. Yeah, true. She's just like, wow, I cannot wait to find out that guy's name. Thank God he didn't shoot me too. And he just looks back like, fuck. I'm supposed to do these things and not be seen. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, God damn it. I'm still like, even right before that, to follow that guy up, I forgot. After I watched it the first time, he does this awesome thing where like the guy gets in an elevator and he waits till the elevator starts going up. And then he just runs and does like a parkour jump
yeah.
over the partition to be able to grab onto the bottom of the actual elevator car. And he just like rides it all the way up to the floor. But during that time, one of his hands like starts to lose its grip and he slips. And I'm just like, oh, he is getting old. That sucks. Like, we've only had 3 of these movies, man. He's only been Bond 3 times. You know, the other guys, how many did, I probably should know this. This is like definitely probably should be some 101, but how many movies did each of the other guys do? Like Connery and Moore did the most, and I know like Lazenby only did 1 and Dalton only did 2 and Brosnan did what, like 4, but how yeah. many did Sean Connery do?
5 or 6 maybe.
Let's see, Google machine, Sean Connery Bond number. I probably should have wrote how many. How many 007 films are there? How many did Sean Connery play?
He made the same one twice because Thunderball was a remake of another one he had made.
I love this audience. This is what it sounds like when you do research on the fly. How many times did Sean Connery play Bond?
This is what it sounds like half the time I ask people questions on my podcast.
And they're just crickets. Like, hold on a second.
Like, wait a second. Yeah.
Oh, it says 6 James Bond films and 1 unofficial. So probably that one unofficial one is the one that they remade, right?
Yeah. Thunderball, yeah.
Thunderball, the remake, which I've seen, I actually enjoyed. And now Roger Moore. How many times did Roger Moore play Bond? Anyone want to wager a guess before we find out from our friends at Google?
7.
I'm going to say he, probably 9 or 10.
We've got, according to Wikipedia, 7 between 1973 and 1985.
Oh, wow.
Boy, yeah, Roger Moore 7 times on BBCAmerica.com, 50 years of James Bond. Wow. All right. So, you know, At three, you're kind of in that middle of like, okay, am I one of the epics? Because the other guys, I think, oh, shit, I closed the window. I should have asked one more time. How many times did Pierce Brosnan? Which, there's the whole, I mean, everybody who was around when the whole Remington Steele fiasco was going on, like, Pierce Brosnan was such a long-awaited James Bond.
Four, wasn't it?
Let's see. Four, GoldenEye, yeah. Tomorrow Never Dies, The World Is Not Enough, and Die Another Day. All with the shittiest titles, too. Like, GoldenEye was the only one that was, like, worth anything. You know? That was, yeah, his and Timothy Dalton with his two, which were just, like, I mean, I didn't mind them so much, but I was also, like, 12. So it was much more forgiving of movies back then. Yeah. But for Craig, to be here at three, and that's sort of right in the middle of, like, okay, one or two more, and you're kind of right there in the pantheon of, like, the epics, and we're already seeing him kind of, like, aged and, like, starting to lose a step. It's like, shit, dude. I'm not ready to let him go. I like him too much so far. I'm sort of back in, especially with Skyfall.
Well, it's a thing that they use jump cuts, you know, kind of the same way that they make all older action stars look great. You know, they use those jump cuts and those shaky shots, so you don't realize how terrible their action sequences really are.
Yeah, just look at any Liam Neeson movie.
Yeah,
true. Although I will say, going from Casino Royale to Quantum of Solace, you see a very distinct difference in direction style, you know, just from the way the shots are. And in Quantum of Solace, you get a lot of that shaky cam. And I think that's also very much heavily used in the Bourne films by Paul Greengrass, everyone after the first one, it's like the camera's right up in there and shaking, so you don't even see what's really happening in the action. Yeah,
that's because Matt Damon's a pussy.
We are calling them out. I love it. Well, hey, I mean,
somebody do it to me.
If you're gonna jump in the pit and like put your material out there, you gotta know people are gonna figure it out. And I think in Quantum of Solace, there was a lot of that going on, which was not directed by Paul Greengrass. It was directed by Mark Forster. But when we get to Sam Mendes here, we get back to more of the traditional. The camera's going to stay still. You guys have to play out this whole choreographed silhouette fight in front of a giant, LCD on the building across the street. And it was amazing. I mean, that just like a slowly pushing in shot. It looks like dance the way they do it.
Yeah, it's very well executed. The stunt double for Daniel Craig, at least in that scene, was a similar build to him, so it wasn't as obvious.
Yeah, it looked exactly like it looked. It was pretty spot on for a casual viewer. I think it worked. For me, I also really like the... I think there are two major train sequences in this film. I liked them both. I really liked when Moneypenny is like in awe of what James is doing, just like on a whim. He's just running after a guy going, oh, here's a bucket loader. Here's a bulldozer. Let me just use this. And, the plan even almost works except for that one shot he takes to the shoulder. And and I know there was a whole I tried to avoid a lot of them when the movie was out in the theater, those like sort of first look on HBO where they show, oh yeah, this is how we designed that whole train sequence. The only thing I knew about this is that he was supposed to, at the very end of it all, like land on his feet and then walk away, like straightening his cufflinks and being all like, oh yeah, no big thing, I just jumped off of a slowing down train car that was connected barely by this giant piece of machinery that I put in there and scared the living shit out of all you people commuting home, you know?
Yeah.
You would think at some point somebody, as soon as that car disconnected, somebody would have pulled the brake cord.
Or there would be some indication to the conductor like, hey, some shit's going on with your train.
Yeah.
Just in case you weren't aware, there might be some dudes having a spy fight on top of your train. And if they are, that's probably going to a little bit affect your commute. Like, someone might get shot. Just go about your business. Don't stop the train. Whatever you do, these guys have to fight on a moving train. That's what they're trained for. Don't stop and help any of them. Don't stop and let our sniper only hit the bad guy. Make sure the train keeps moving.
Yeah, because that's the script tells us this is what we got
to
do.
I know it's counterintuitive to anything you normal people would do, but just do it.
I do got to bring up one thing, though. The one thing that really just really turned me off on the action, that whole first part of the action sequence. I thought it was going really good. They had a little bit of comedy in there. I thought that was kind of cool. But the motorcycle scene where he rams the motorcycle into the brick wall and he goes flipping through the air.
Yeah, it looked like he was about to break his neck.
Yeah, you know, I was just like,
fuck? Like, what are you doing? Oh my God.
There could have been something else that they could have used there rather than a motorcycle catapult. And then,
well, I think he could have used another car as some kind of a ramp and jumped the motorcycle and then jumped off the motorcycle and landed on the train instead of like looking like, oh, my God, it's luck that I landed on the train. I don't know how to time my tricks anymore.
If you actually watch that scene over, you can see a massive screw up between the two takes. The moment the bike hits the wall, it goes backwards. And then when they cut to going the other way, the bike's coming with them.
Yeah, good call. Yeah. See, wow. See, this is like they take advantage of the fact that our minds can't process all of this that quickly. It's like we fill in gaps, right? Like your mind always fills in gaps for things that it misses sometimes. And you would just be like, naturally, your mind would be like, oh, yeah, the bike would come with him. Sure, okay. And even though my mind just saw it bounce the other way. Fuck it. Yeah, it's like what I would see in a comic book frame, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, your mind just automatically progressively puts the next scene together. And it the other one's history. You don't need to worry about that one no more.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
I'm the asshole in the cinema that points this stuff out.
Well, I think there are a lot of other people who felt like they were trying to be that asshole going like, how would he know to set up that train trap? Like, how would he know Bond? Like, this whole thing would be contingent on Bond following him down that hallway. And he almost didn't make it because there was a locked door to get there and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, all right, for one, it's a movie.
Yep.
Two, of course it makes sense. This guy's like the Joker, except that he's the MI6 version, you know, like... He probably has 15 of these traps set up all over the fucking place, and any one of them are ready to go no matter who is chasing him. Getting caught was definitely part of his plan, but this other shit, just buy it. It would happen. There's ones that haven't gone off yet. Good luck, London. Good luck. There is a certain element where both of these characters also have a back from the dead situation going on, which is sort of like sort of that general hero's journey of like you have to fall to realize like you kind of, I don't know, were succumbing to hubris or whatever, you know, like you got to almost an Icarus level with your powers and it made you too cocky and that's why you got shot. And it's only being humbled by death that you can come back a greater, more Gandalf the White version of yourself.
Yeah, it's all been there.
And so... I think that's why maybe the second half of the film has such a different tone. And maybe I just justified it to myself right there by saying that out loud. And I can feel like I can fully 100% say, yes, Skyfall is now my favorite. I'm hoping that Spectre doesn't knock that out, actually. Like, I hope Spectre's awesome, but I hope I still love Skyfall the best.
You, Bo.
Awesome. Although I guess I've read somewhere that Casino Royale is actually just the best out of all of them. And that, even though the others are good, that one still is like it kind of really can't be topped so much.
I mean, you look at Casino Royale and they've remade it, what, 3 or 4 times?
Well, so, the first remake was more of a parody remake, right?
Yeah, I think it was a parody, yeah. David Niven and Woody Allen and folk like that.
Yeah, and it's Peter Sellers, you know, it's sort of like was not trying to be, and it had a really like kind of 70s, almost like a laugh-in kind of style theme song to it.
It's kind of like the Pink Panther movies in a way type of humor.
Yeah.
It's actually quite entertaining when you watch it.
But I always thought that made this an interesting choice for them to kick off this new, like, sort of reboot arc of the franchise with Casino Royale and making it back to the serious take on it. And I think that it was that level of seriousness. I feel like not having Q and Moneypenny made it a little bit more serious as well. Though I have to say, really impressed with how they brought them in this movie. I thought it was awesome. Because he definitely almost slept with Moneypenny at least twice. You know, you're like, oh my God. How is she the one that he's not, like, closing the deal with? And then at the end when she's like, Moneypenny, you're like, oh, so she's the one you're never going to sleep with. Got it. She will live. She will not succumb to Bond. I'm waiting for Tess back. No, listen, if you've been with Bond, you've got it. You've got Bond.
Yep.
M even had Bond for 5 seconds before she died because they were both bleeding all over each other.
So how do you test for that? You test for lead poisoning or what?
I think you just walk by and they say, have you fucked Bond? And they're like, yeah. Even if you use protection, you've got it, man. You're dead. It's the condom-proof STD. It just goes right through. God, and I want to watch Spectre. Ladies, I know that it's just because Daniel Craig is so easy to look at that you can overlook this very obvious detail that if you wind up touching him, you will die. Just be ready. It's a good way to go out, I guess. That one chick was horrified. Severin, the Bond chick in this movie, I feel horrible for. I mean, M too, because the way she dies. But that chick, it was just like, we get the impression from something that Bond says to her that her whole life was one of those, like, sex trade, sex trafficked, like, by the mafia, like, you're not your own person kind of lives. and all of a sudden it's like, hey, I'm going to help them get Bond, and I get killed for it. Like, in such a dick way. Like, when it's like Bond's trying to not shoot her, and we know that his, like, accuracy sucks now. He got a 40% on his firing range test to go back in the field. And so he's like, here, shoot the shot off of her head, this shot of whiskey. And he actually tries, and the other guy's just like, what do you think of that? It's like, dude, are you fucking kidding? And it's like, Bond. She got Bond.
Yeah, I win.
Yeah, although then he kills his whole crew. Like, he pulls a Jason Bourne right there.
Yeah, yeah, he just kind of goes batshit crazy and just does some breakdancing gun-fu thing and
gun-fu.
Kills them all.
So, I mean, and then the second half of the movie is almost like Fort Bond up at Skyfall, which is the name, I guess, of this home that he lived in. I always got the impression that he was an orphan, like a full-on orphan. When they were calling him an orphan in Casino Royale, that he was like an orphan from an orphanage, like didn't even know who his parents were. So, like, learning that they had this, like, deep thing of, like, yeah, his parents and this house, and when he found out they were dead, he hid in this, like, tunnel cave that we have for 2 days, and when he came out of that, he wasn't a boy anymore. It's like, Jesus Christ, what is happening out here? You guys
had these own Alfred like Batman does.
Yeah, yeah. Albert Finney shows up and I tell him, like, get the hell out of that cave. Your parents are dead. It's good to see you. Layer cake was awesome.
it makes sense, though, if he was an orphan, why M would be such a maternal figure. But now it's kind of confusing. You know, what's going on there? You know, why is M so protective of Bond? What's between those two? Is she the one that survived all those years ago?
Or did she kill his parents? Like, is she responsible for his parents dying, maybe? You know, like how if you saw Captain America Civil War, didn't we find out that the Winter Soldier killed Tony Stark's parents? So it's like, spoiler alert. I say spoiler alert. I'm sorry, did you not know that? Shit, man, I'm sorry.
I knew that, yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Thank God. Chris, did you not know that? That was going to come up in the panel when we eventually pull that together. Well, the shit's out on Blu-ray. I think everyone's had enough time to see that, you know?
If you've gone this long and you're not prepared for spoilers, trust us, this is not the first show there's ever been a spoiler on.
And seriously, you're going to have a rough time just in general. I mean, again, I'm saying I'm amazed I never found out that M dies in this one after 5 years, but I think the the landscape for just blurting stuff out has grown quite a bit on social media.
I actually didn't realize M died.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
Jesus, dude. See, this is the... I definitely walk right into those, so I'd be a very bad 00 agent. I'd be like, oh, really? You're James Bond? Oh. like, as I'm being stabbed. Like, yep. Yeah, that was good.
One of the interesting things there was that Ralph Fiennes was actually their first choice for Bond when Daniel Craig got cast.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it's cool that they still brought him into the series then, and I think he was epic. He was so good in this. Like the trance, they did a great job showing him transform over the course of the film. And there was, I guess, that pivotal moment when Silva almost gets M in the, I guess, what do you call that? It wasn't a court. I guess it's a court of some kind.
Yeah.
I don't know. In the system across the pond over there, I'm not sure what they call it, but basically she was answering to the, was it the prime minister? Was it like there was, or a premier, something, some high level government official. And he, like, walks in and almost shoots her. And then Bond comes in and they have, like, the hero music moment. And then the new M, you know, Mallory, picks up a gun and he starts fighting too. It's just like, holy shit, everybody's on the same team again. Like this, hey guys, we got the band back together and we are kicking ass. Listen to this. And just open fire at the same time. It was pretty cool. And that was a big, once that happened, we kind of are in the home stretch for the action portion of the film. The action movie, like we're holding it down in an old Scottish mansion fort and we're killing like wave after wave of bad guy armed with machine guns. And we're using like little traps like Home Alone, but instead it's like a plastic bag around a shotgun shelf and surrounded by screws and nuts and bolts, and we screw that into like a light bulb socket. Like that was crazy. M is like an old Q over here, and you know, the new Q, kind of as awesome as he was, he kind of totally let Silva hack the system there. So I don't know, maybe learning curve still to go with that guy.
I'm not a fan of the new Q at all.
It's like he's the most acquired taste, I think, of this whole new reboot part. Like Moneypenny, I'm fully on board with. I was just like, oh shit, the chick from 28 Days Later. Look at that. I don't even know her name is Naomi Harris. Now I do. All right, there you go. Your name is Naomi Harris. Her name was Naomi Harris. But he was kind of like, I felt like they're trying to do with him what they did with Nicholas Hoult in the X-Men movies, you know, making him this sort of like young, hip beast who can keep human form or some shit. But at least it's like he's like the young science guy, you know what I mean? And I feel like they tried to do the same thing here.
They got to hit that millennial market, you know, and
to let them know you could get a job like this, dudes. They exist. They exist. I swear. You could wind up working for a spy organization. Do you know how to write like crazy holographic password protection files? Like that, whatever he called it, an organic virus program that everything he would do to try to get in, it would counteract. And he's like, but I designed it. And I'm like, well, then you should undo this shit. You should not be getting the system hacked. What the fucking fuck, kid? Are you lying or what? What is this? And he's just like, yeah, I actually don't know how to do computer shit.
You pulled your resume off of LinkedIn, didn't you?
I totally got this job because of who I know. I totally got this job because of who. I did come up with the Walther that's coded to the person's palm print that no one else can shoot but the person who would give it to you. I did come up with that. And the little radio that we give him with it. That was my idea, too. All the rest of this shit. Listen, there's a team here supposed to be supporting me, right? Where's somebody I could steal some ideas from? Who are these young interns with good ideas? Where are you? That's the commercial they're showing at colleges. And you're like, all right, I'll go work for them. That'll be fucking awesome. I could be the new Q. I'll be Q, too.
QD3.
Oh, man. So anything about the ending sequence, you guys? Anything standing out? The action was awesome. I thought it was pretty badass, the whole Bond conquering all. Although we have a final moment of insanity with Javier Bardem's character where it's suddenly like, for half a second, he cares about M like a mom, too. Like, so both of these guys kind of had this like mother fixation with M is kind of the overarching theme.
This mother fixation?
Yeah, I guess. Is that... There's a lot of fixations in these.
Yeah, you know, I thought the ending was probably the most, was the biggest letdown, in my opinion. I mean, yeah, it was epic, but it's, you know, it's a Bond film. Bond is always going to save the day. Bond is always going to be the hero at the end of the hour. But you expected to, at least I expected that, M would stand up and be like, just another day at the office.
Oh, at the end of it all, that she would survive?
Yeah.
Well, and she died from getting shot in the leg. You know what I mean? Like, she died from bleeding to death. But, I mean, Silva wanted her to shoot them both in the head with the same bullet. Like, that thing. Where he's like, oh my god, they hurt you? They hurt you? Oh my god, you have to end it. You do it. You do it. One bullet. Kill us both with the same bullet. I was like, whoa. What the hell is happening here?
It would have been a better ending if she pulled the trigger.
That actually would be pretty badass.
Yeah, and killed him and herself. That would have been a better ending.
And then, like, his uncle had to, like, stop him from going completely insane, you know, like, because then that would send Bond off in this, like, psychotic rage of trying to find how this happened. You know, like, he would have no one to aim that anger at, because
then we'd have a Mission Impossible.
Well, we don't have what I was expecting in this movie. From the way everybody had talked about it, was that there would be more mention or more sort of suggestion of something like Spectre, because, like, in the last movie, Quantum turns out to be this, like, secret shadow government kind of group made up of, like, wealthy industrialists who are controlling commodities and whatever. But they turn out to just be sort of like a smaller version of Spectre. And I feel like in this film, there was really no mention of that. And I was really expecting it because of how tightly knit these four films are supposed to be. But yeah, it was this full exploration of, like, Bond's actual, like, childhood traumas, like the things that are making him who he is now. So I guess in some ways it still feels like it's got that tied together thing, because, I mean, we can't help but think of, like, Vesper and all that he's gone through up to this point. But yeah, we're definitely not left thinking, like, there's this organization to go after. So if she did pull the trigger and he saw it but wasn't able to stop it, he would be just like this, like, off in the... He would be Logan, you know? He'd be, like, looking for his cave to go live in and be pissed off and, like, psychotic in, you know? And, like, we need him to be able to aim that at something. And I feel like, so then maybe the first act of the next film would then be, like, we have to find Bond. We've discovered this thing called Spectre. And he comes back and goes, then I shall kill them as I wanted to kill him, you know? And make it this whole really crazy end-it-all kind of final chapter for the four films.
Yeah. You think what they're trying to do is just end it all?
If I think, and I kind of feel like after Christopher Nolan, that's what people should start doing maybe with these four, you know, groupings of films.
So just kill franchises just like that.
That's no, like, let them go through, like, a period, like, all right, these four were the Daniel Craig era, and now let's bring in a new director and a new actor, and we'll do, like, three, almost like the way they used to do mini-series of comic books, you know?
Yeah. They really need to kill Bond, though, so they can kind of keep that 007 thing, so they can really portray the 007 transfer between person to person, I think.
Because we've never seen, like, the person who had it before James Bond. We've always just known 007 to be James Bond's title.
Right.
Like, who was the 007 before him who got killed? Who then they're like, all right, it's time to promote somebody. Bond's looking good. Let's make James Bond the 007.
Hey, Sean, you're going to be the new 007, but we got to change your name. Otherwise, it doesn't fit with the books.
Yeah. Well, in the books, is the name an inherited thing, too? Like, part of it?
No, I've read the book, some of the books, and that's just his name.
So, yeah, it's a little bit more like what they did here with Skyfall, where it's like he could have had a father who's Andrew Bond.
The books are batshit crazy, though, as well. There's crazy stuff in them, like they have things in them. Gay people can't whistle is apparently a known fact, going by Ian Fleming.
Can't whistle?
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, apparently Ian Fleming couldn't whistle when he was a...
Wow. Holy shit. They do say when you write, you're trying to create something you wish you were. So who knows? Now all of a sudden we've gone from talking about these awesome movies to shitting all over Ian Fleming. Like, fuck you, dude. Fuck you for creating this awesome thing.
Yeah, he's a bit of a shithead, so it's easy to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can look up, there's also, like, YouTube videos about how he was part of this whole Illuminati takeover of entertainment and media, so I guess it would make sense that somebody would have that questionability around them that created something that has this level of cult fandom about it, you know? But, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, Skyfall was an awesome movie. For as much as we poking fun at it and poking holes in it, I thought it was a really... Visually, it was epic, and it felt much more of a deserving next chapter from where we started with Casino Royale than Quantum of Solace did. So it definitely reinvigorated me being like, all right, let's see more of these, you know?
I agree. It was an epic movie. I think that it was probably one of the best James Bond movies ever put out, so... Yeah, I would. You know, it's easy to watch over and over. It's not one of those where you watch it one time and like Moonraker, you know, Moonraker is that. Yeah.
One and done.
Jesus.
Yeah. But no, this is definitely one of those shows that you can watch over and over, and you can see something new, a different, you know, part of the plot each time you watch it. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I found out today that the house that they filmed at the end of it is like only about 2 hours from where I stay, which I didn't know before. That's quite cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I think it's one of the best Bond movies. Yeah, Quantum of Solace is probably one of the worst, so to come back from that, it's quite impressive.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess we'll just have to see where things go from here as we enter into the next chapter, which will be Spectre, which I'm sure all of us, if not hopefully all of us, will be back for the next installment. But until then, you know, keep your ears to the fucking internet airwaves, and where can they find you guys if they wanted to hear more from each of you out there in Internetica?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at TheDrewCarson, and you can download my podcast, which is the Terraformer podcast, which has a little logo of a pumpkin head with Terraformer written under it, so it's easy to find.
Mm, nice.
So I want to just translate for him there. He said that was at the Drew Carson.
Yep.
No, I'm just busting on you, buddy. if you want to find me, just go to ripcomedia.com. You can catch all my social media links right there, and you can even send me an email.
Awesome. And I'm hoping you guys will join us out here in the Hollow Nine universe again sometime, maybe definitely for the next chapter in the Bond binge, but for any of the other crazy things we've got going on, ranging from a rewatch of Twin Peaks to get ready for the new episodes coming out in April there. Always covering the world of horror on our horror cast. And we do have the second half of our Westworld podcast coming out, and we're, after seeing the new trailer, highly anticipating Stranger Things, so we might do some extra episodes over there, like maybe even finishing our first season rewatch would be good. But yeah, just keep your ears to the net waves, and you'll hear all kinds of cool stuff coming out. So until then, gentlemen, thank you for joining me, and your comments have been entered into the record for our data analysis to follow. And we'll be in touch, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay. Yeah. That actually might get me to watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, Quantum of Solace,
it might actually get you to watch it.
Man, Quantum of Solace, yes. I half-ass watched.
Quantum of Solace was same level as Spectre for me, honestly.
Yeah, it was kind of like an unfortunate that this was even in the series, entry into the series. You know what I mean?
I don't remember what happened.
He leaves his friend in a fucking dumpster and robs him.
Yeah, they do like one cool thing in that movie where they kind of introduce this almost like a mini version of Spectre, where Quantum is kind of like a shadow government. You know?
Yes. I mean? Okay. That's why they're in the same category for me.
All these people are kind of like at this play in Spain, and they're actually having a meeting about like moving global commodities around and stuff.
You know what else pissed me off about Spectre? The advertisements for it. Like, there was some fucking Baron Samedi looking motherfucker up in that shit.
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
I thought, oh, Baron Samedi's coming back? What's going on? And then, no.
The PlayStation?
No.
PlayStation Network, when it released, gave you a free background for it, a theme.
Yeah.
And it's the Baron like this.
Yeah, I was like, what? Did I miss something? I don't know what's happening.
Wasn't that Batista? Wasn't that Batista's character in Spectre?
So. Yeah.
Batista's in Spectre?
Yeah, Drax, right?
Yeah, from Drax the Destroyer.
Yeah, Guardians. He's got this...
Bautista.
And I feel like he's an homage to a classic character as well. I don't remember what that character's name was. But he doesn't have any dialogue. He basically is just like the uber henchman who's killing people. Tries to kill Bond a couple times and fails.
I remember when
like they do.
Robert Shaw was a henchman in a Bond movie. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what one he was in.
But yeah,
Bleach Bond.
Bleach Bond?
Bleach Blonde.
Yeah.
The director for Dark Tower, by the way, just to circle back to that real quick. That's Nikolai Arcel, or Arcel, I don't know how you pronounce it. He did the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo films.
Oh, you mean the ones I never saw?
Gotcha. Which ones? Yeah. The originals or the new ones?
I'm clicking the 2009. Is this the Noomi Rapace one?
Yeah, if it's 2009.
Did it have Daniel Craig? that's the new one.
No, it did not have Daniel Craig. Interestingly enough, no.
Okay, no, that's the old one.
This is the new Mirror Pace versions.
Oh, yeah. That's right. They continued that series. They did. I remember now.
Yeah.
That girl kicked
the he's doing Dark Tower.
Both of them are hot. Both the chicks that play in both of the movies, both versions are hot.
Yeah. Just like every chick in the Bond movies, for the most part.
In the trailer,
but yeah, the one in Skyfall is gorgeous. And then, like, when he kills her, he's like, "What did you think of that?" You're just like, "Oh my god!"
I know. I was like, "What the fuck?
What the fucking fuck are you talking about? What do I think of that?
Holy shit!
I think you're an asshole."
Well, yeah, man. All right, well, really difficult to master. Any final words on Bond for you guys? Like, if they, you know, they're talking about, you know. I think Spectre sucked. I think, Sam, you agree with me, Samson. But I almost tell people don't bother watching it. Like, if you haven't seen Skyfall, see Skyfall, and then just leave it there. Like, let it stop. Right,
absolutely.
They are now talking about doing a 25th Bond film, and there's been a little bit of talk of actually modeling the villain after Donald Trump.
Sweet Jesus. So the next villain's quirk will be a sentient.
He said he'll only do it if the script is good. And he's sort of, I think, what did they say? The writer of Spectre and Skyfall, one, because there's a team of three people that wrote both movies.
Yeah.
Two of the writers have signed on for this 25th one. So if you guys had a magic wand, or, you know, were consulted to produce a new Bond movie, What would you want to do with it? What kind of villain would you want? What kind of storyline would you want? Would you want Daniel Craig? Would you want somebody else? Give us your ideal Bond flick as designed by these Strength and Gaming peeps.
Idris Elba.
Idris Elba.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think we all want Idris Elba, and I want him to, he already has that gravitas because it's Idris Elba, but I want that to come through. Like, I mean, just like, I don't know.
I want a gadget driven one. Like, he's always been like MacGyver. Yeah, he had his gadgets, so he didn't have to like put it together with a fucking piece of shoestring or anything like that. But his situations, like, he had, you know, knowledge of that kind of stuff. Daniel Craig kind of felt like fly by the seat of your pants. I mean, Quantum of Solace, he was going to kill himself until he found an escape.
So we want a Bond that's a little bit more respectful of the gadgets and maybe knows how to use more of them.
Yeah, and not have a 13-year-old quartermaster and bring the Vanquish back. For sure, bring the Vanquish back. We don't need him driving fucking Ford concept cars and shit.
Yeah, well, then you have to watch Skyfall.
No, he actually drives a foreign car?
Doesn't he get the car back?
Yeah.
And then it's spoiler alert, also destroyed in that movie.
Well, I'm fine with Skyfall, he drives the original.
Oh, okay, because Quartermaster always got pissed off. They, please bring this one back in one piece.
And then I think they 007. Pull that in Spectre. He kind of says, oh, yeah, we have a new car. And he goes, but this is for 009. And then when they go to give it to 009, 007 has already taken it. And it's sort of like a souped-up modern version of the car that got destroyed, right? Because it was made from the... He's like, we were able to save the frame, and then we built the rest of this around.
That's kind of funny. Because the Vanquish show, the last Daniel Craig one... Or not Daniel Craig one, Pierce Brosnan one. It was called The Vanish, because it had the cloaking stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, even him surfing on a wave of melted ice in fucking... Die Another Day. I'll take over Daniel Craig's Bond any day.
Wow, tough room.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, because Spike hasn't seen Skyfall. Let's just put that out there.
I know. I'm just.
I haven't seen that one, but it's still.
It does flip halfway through and become like a Last Stand film. You know what I mean? And that it's like the fact that it's kind of two stories in one almost. Like,
and then
they could have split
in
that
the beginning.
Yeah,
John dies at the end.
Well, yeah.
But no, I mean, I'm not hating on Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig's a perfectly fine actor. It's just, I think he was a poor Bond choice. Well, not even a poor Bond choice, but he was a poor Bond choice for the type of Bond that they did.
Well,
he made a great stormtrooper.
Other than Idris.
So did Kevin Smith.
Other than Idris Elba, what would you like to add to the movie? Mm-hmm. Our Bond, Strength and Gaming's Bond, Devin.
Idris Elba.
What about
extra Elba? villains.
I'd bring back a male M, and that's nothing against Judy Dench. I just kind of feel like they've made her a damsel in distress.
He said, what about villains?
Oh, villains.
God damn it.
My bad. I stick with what I said.
And also, let me wait. Hold on. Let me be a misogynist first.
Oh, no, no.
I want to be a fucking misogynist.
No,
villains. I want to be a misogynist. I think Spike should be the villain.
I could be the villain. It'd be pretty awesome.
Well, there's a man. Donald Trump might be. It's close enough.
It's going to be huge. I guarantee it's going to be the biggest Bond ever. And MGM will pay for it.
And Bond will lose. Sad.
The first one ever.
I think if we're going to bring back a Bond villain, we should bring back a...
Well, if you're going to bring one back, but go ahead.
Well, because we brought back Blofeld, and last time I remember, Blofeld got dropped into a smokestack off a helicopter.
I'm thinking more along the lines of, what will we want our Bond villain to be?
Ooh.
Let's bring one back.
Because I was actually kind of excited to hear that Javier is a 00. But
you could springboard an old one if you want. But I mean, if you guys wanted to create an original villain, you know, give him a quirk, give him whatever.
A new one would be one that he couldn't like beat the fuck out of.
I was gonna say actually, what I would really like, and I haven't seen some of the old ones, so this may be kind of a pullback. But I would like to see kind of like a Bane type situation for Batman in the origin, which is that, you know, I'd like a Bond villain that is smarter, stronger, all around better than Bond is, in virtually every conceivable way.
That wasn't the original Bane storyline, but okay.
It was early in Bane's
Bane's super smart. I don't like that they played him up as a thing. That's why I like the Dark Knight Rises Bane, and he was like the star of the movie. But what I would want to see is like, because we always go up against someone who at the end of the movie it comes to blows, always doing whatever the hell. But what do we do when after all this, it's world domination, it's almost successful, casualties, billions of dollars of collateral damage, and the man behind the curtain is a paraplegic who's just really good with computers?
Wow.
No, but like honestly, nice. you pull back the veil, and the architect of all your pain is a fucking a Stephen Hawking kind of villain who's just mad at the world for the situation he's been put in.
And then maybe he feels bad for ending him.
Yeah, it's kind of like, he gets put in a moral conundrum of this man's already in prison, and that's why he's doing the shit he can do. So it's like he has to do what he has to do. But, I mean, that literally means punching a guy with glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's just my own kind of thing. And of course, I have really cool
henchmen. Well, both of you are wearing glasses, so.
Yeah. But, I mean, you had him lasered off, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how that works.
I have bionic eyes.
Mm. But I don't know. I kind of think that'd be a pretty rich concept.
No, that is. I like that.
That sounds cool. I would like that.
And are you thinking contemporary modern times, or would you push it into the future? Would you want to see it in the further past? Or you know?
No, I mean, definitely set it now. I don't like. I wouldn't want a period Bond, but definitely have the gadgets drive it. And because technology has come so far, I remember like the first time we had a cell phone in a Bond movie, and he opens it up and has a touchpad to control the car. So we have stuff like that, and have like jokes where Q just tells him to download an app, go to the MI5 app store and get some new shit on there, you know. So he has a phone that's updatable with new cool shit on it. I mean, you can push the boundaries of technology because it's come so far. You can stretch it a little bit further. So we already have cool tablets. What if his tablet can do this shit?
Yeah.
So his technology is just above what we can conceive because their technology is so far ahead.
It's basically what you would get if it was the video game version of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, like, because that's how you would order your new weapons. It's like, oh, hey, you basically go to, like, a Palm Pilot that connects you to, like, a network of armory delivery into the middle of the field. Yeah.
I feel like for a villain, I would want something a little more horror, a little scarier, a little more almost, I want to say supernatural, but not actually. Like, I want to bring...
Like a Moriarty kind of character?
Yeah. Yeah. Something that is so... fuck. Now you just reminded me of the latest Sherlock. like a Moriarty or someone that almost feels like, how is this shit even possible? It has to be magic or ghost or something. Like,
or like, and horrific. Like, what if they downloaded somebody's consciousness into a new
cloned
body?
The singularity.
Oh.
I think Bond should have to fight the singularity, the ghost in the machine, not an actual person, but or maybe they were a person at some point,
huh.
But they like an artificial intelligence
or a person
or like GLaDOS or like what was that Eagle Eye or whatever. It wasn't a great movie, but the concept was solid, I mean, because then this villain would be able to infiltrate all his gadgets.
Yeah, it would take it away, but they'd still be there, so you'd still have.
But he would still villain. This thing, this person, this being would still have minions in real life.
Yeah.
And maybe even like a puppet, like you would say, like so it would still kind of have like the like maybe you would have somebody filling in like a false Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Or awesome. Something. But it's actually, you know, the real villain is in the machine someplace, mm-hmm. and that could be one where maybe Bond doesn't really win. Like maybe mm-hmm. he does, but.
He stops it, but it's still just saved on an SD card somewhere kind of thing. Gets stowed away in Area 51 before it gets nuked and Indiana Jones survives in a fridge kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
What about this? What about when he finds out where it came from? It's actually an algorithm of his consciousness that was copied by MI6 and they let it run in like a simulator and it went evil. And it's that's why it's a step ahead of him the whole time. It knows all the things that he knows. It's an actual experiment gone out of control.
That's like a
a training algorithm they based on 007 to get more agents like him.
Fuck, my brain's not working.
Is it ever?
No.
It's like Brother Eye.
The Avengers.
Ultron.
Yeah.
Ultron. Yeah.
Wasn't Ultron sort of like Jarvis, but not.
It was Jarvis and Tony.
Together. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, it was a combination. That's right. Yeah. So something like that. That would be pretty crazy.
Yeah, that would. I like that. Like the OMAC virus, like Brother.
Shit's getting real in this alternative universe of Strengthcast. Mm-hmm.
No, but that'd be a good one, especially with like hacker groups going around like that. It could be like a masqueraded as a hacker group, but it turns out the Mr. Robot anonymous mask, you know, isn't actually a person. The mask is just the face that this sentient computer has chosen.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice. See, we should be writing this down.
Yeah. Someone's gonna steal this.
Yeah, I guarantee.
The Zeitgeist has already heard us now, and this will be the next pawn that comes out.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I could throw some new elements you guys way. Maybe you have a second life somewhere as doing like when you don't feel like talking about games one day, you do a movie podcast.
Yeah, but absolutely.
It has been a lot of fun talking James Bond with you guys. Thank you very much for joining us over here in the Hollow Nine universe, and I hope we all cross paths again and find some more stuff to talk about and share on each other's channels going forward. Okay. Anything you guys want to tell our listeners about that they can find on your website? Anything you got coming up? Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, well, absolutely. We have a few things. One, we just talked about GoldenEye on a show, I think. so that relates to Bond, right?
There you go.
The flow of time is convoluted.
Yeah, the flow of it's wibbly wobbly. And timey wimey. You can find all our shit on Twitter at str_cast. You can find our Facebook facebook.com/strngaming, and you can find us on Instagram str.cast. Or STR period cast, whatever, however you want to fucking spell that. But we have a pretty big event coming. I'm not exactly sure when this is airing, so
sooner than later, but it could be in part two because we have an awful lot of data compiled on Skyfall now.
Okay, so I'm gonna say this probably already happened and it was amazing. but we recorded with Bottle Logic, the brewery, at their brewery during the week of Logic, and that's an episode you should really go and check out because
Sal pooped himself.
Because Sal pooped himself because he wasn't even there. That's why he wasn't there, because he pooped himself.
He had to clean up the poopy.
It's true. Well,
there you go.
That's why he isn't here now.
That's false.
Yeah. It happens.
But he
got something stuck in his ass. That's why he's not here.
Yeah, you can find everything Strength and Gaming at strengthandgaming.com or straight to our podcast, strcast.com. And yeah, we play video games and we talk about video games, much like we talk about movies. Although I think this was a little bit more intense than usual. Yeah. I think we got a little intense.
One. I like this one.
Yeah. It's not even our show. It's not even our episode, but I liked it.
Yeah, no, I liked it a lot.
Well, You guys did not let it show if it was making you sweat, and that's awesome. So thank you very much for being good sports and keeping it real while the intensity was dialing up. And we'll definitely do this again sometime. So thank you guys very much.
Thank you for having us. Yeah,
thanks for having us, man.
But no, overall, I mean, I really, this movie just blew me away.
Yeah.
How well it was put together.
Their visual style of this film.
But the one thing that did bug me, though,
okay,
bugged me a lot about recent movies, is it falls into the, we need a way to get the bad guy to the good guys. I know, let's have the good guys capture him, but it's part of the bad guy's plot.
Oh, okay. So we're talking about how intricate Silva's plan really could have been.
But it's even, I mean, it's like, does it really have to be that complicated?
I mean,
is that really a necessary, I mean, and I understand why they did it, but, I mean, if you look at Loki in the Avengers, the first one, mm-hmm, where part of his plot is to get captured.
Right, right.
If you look at Khan in the Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah.
Part of his plot is to get captured.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, guys, there are other plot elements that you could be pulling from. You don't all have to make the same goddamn movie.
Well, it also, you know, just to play the devil's advocate with you, because I think I may have, you know, of all the things, I still say, I'm shocked that I wasn't spoiled on M not surviving this film, but I think there was no way to survive being alive and not hearing about this elaborate train sequence where Silva's in the tunnel and Bond follows him, and then he pushes, he says, you know, newest thing from your local toy store or radio, and he pushes the button and explodes the wall, and it's like a decent distance away from Bond, and he goes, I hope that wasn't for me, and he goes, no, that's for you. And then a train comes, like, as if so the physics of this is that they're under the city, he blew up a section that's right under some train track that now is a giant hole that,
yes,
that train's gonna go right into. Okay, so now everybody from Huffington Post movie critics to New York Times movie critics to Drudge Report movie critics, just to get both sides of the aisle in here, said, like, this is complete bullshit. How would he know that Bond would even follow him there? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Like, that's a ridiculous contrivance. It's a plot device. Da-da-da. Like, well, first of all, yes, you're watching a fucking movie that does have a plot, so there will be plot devices. Let's get
usually
over that.
They do have it, yes.
And in my mind, I kind of feel like, let's take this a step further, and I kind of got into this with the other guys a little bit. What if this is one of several traps like this,
oh,
that he has just planted all over the fucking city?
I had a bigger problem with the fact that cyanide does not melt your face.
Right, right. And that he has this, like, crazy cheek prosthetic, yep, that you just put it in and it smooths the scar away.
It takes care of the jaw, too. I mean, I had a bigger problem with that than, you know, I set up a trap in case somebody was following me to drop a train on them.
And on top of that, it's like, and when you guys arrested me, nobody figured out that I have a facial prosthetic in here. You know what I mean? Like, this
that
is
have been a gun.
This is MI6, right? Even though you're operating from your B site because he blew up their office.
Well, that was the other part that bothered me, was that they have Silva's computer, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't hook it up to a dead server?
Yeah, that, and I was like, so this is supposed to be the quartermaster being overly confident and too inexperienced, exactly what Bond calls him out for being when they first meet. You know what I mean?
Cause, I mean, you could be a 14-year-old script kiddie. You don't hook up, you don't connect a unknown item to a live network.
On top of that, didn't he say once they start, like, attacking the virus, like, once he starts realizing, like, oh, it's got this kind of encryption, and Bond's like, can you get around that? He goes, I invented it. And I'm like, well, then what the fuck, dude? And I'm like, so far, you're too smart for that to have happened. Because then he turns around and goes, can someone tell me how he hacked our system? I'm like, dude, are you fucking kidding me? I'm like, if M were in the room, you would be fired and murdered right now.
Yes.
Like,
and maybe not necessarily
shit
in that order.
Right. And, like, she would murder you and then be like, mark him down as fired. Yeah, like, we fired him. We retired that agent. Yeah. I liked his attitude. I liked the way he presented himself when he meets Bond. But then that moment, you're right. Like, when that happened and then he quickly runs over and he pulls out the 10 base T cables, I was like,
That was dumb.
It's like, you are an idiot. Like, how did you get this job?
That's a 101 mistake, dude. That is a 101 mistake. Oh. You know, you're going to talk shit about exploding pens? I've never had an exploding pen. Get the fucking network hacked, you motherfucker! Are you kidding me? Make explosive shit! You know, it's like, what are you thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my
Thank you.
God. Yeah,
like I said, I really enjoyed the movie, but there were a couple of those kind of moments that was like, did you run this by a 5-year-old?
Yeah, seriously. Like, I don't believe you all would have survived your lives long enough to get to this moment if this is how you're going out. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Like, James Bond probably should have been dead several times before now, but he went into all those situations knowing that dying is a very real possibility, and his training is why he survived. But yes. The rest of you fuckers should have been killed by a mall security officer at this point. You know what I mean? Like, oh my God.
Who's that?
There is one thing. I mean, Javier Bardem is amazing. I wound up actually last night watching No Country for Old Men just sort of to, like, kind of reorient and get some perspective, because in that, they're very similar characters. I mean, like, Silva's laser focus and persistence is probably very comparable to Anton Chigurh, but Anton Chigurh did not have the personality that Silva has.
Well, no. I mean, Anton Chigurh was basically like, is supposed to be like the
personification of death.
Man. I mean, he's kind of like the Jason Voorhees for that movie.
Right, right. You can't talk to him. It's like he's already made up his mind that you're going to die when you guys meet.
Yeah, exactly.
But in this one, he has a slightly, like, he's constantly rotating personalities or attitudes. You know, like, when he first meets Bond, he gives him this whole speech about training the rats to eat other rats. You know, like, that was epic, I thought. You know, that his...
Well, I mean, he did a very good job of presenting somebody who was so badly broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he was just... It gave me chills. I mean, like... This is somebody who's dangerously unhinged.
Yeah.
Brilliant, but unhinged.
I mean, because if we're going to take that his plan involved getting captured, escaping elaborately, setting a train trap, all these things, the plan also had to then include Bond killing all of his henchmen at that island fortress, you know, as part of the apprehension. Bit, yeah. You know what I mean?
He treats his people the way that he feels that M treated him.
Yeah.
It's just another resource to be used and disposed.
And meanwhile, something that came up when I was talking with Chris and Drew, the idea that Bond is watching all of this and realizing he's in exactly the position that Silva had been in. You know, I mean, like M said, take the shot. She missed the bad guy and hit Bond. And Bond was, like, dead for a couple months over it. You know what I mean? Like, yep. He not only took the wound, but then he said, fuck this, I'm disappearing.
part of the big difference, though, is that he came back.
Well, he came back when he hears that they're attacked. You know, he's...
Well, but he still... I mean, he did not have to come back.
Well, right, and I think she even said, like, why didn't you come back, or why did you come back? Like, it was like she was kind of just like, whoa, oh, okay, we thought you were actually dead. Like, I wrote an obituary for you, you know what I mean? Like, it was... I think they actually did think he was really dead. And that's part of his training too, is to be able to disappear like that, which is something, it's weird. This movie, I think we go in as the audience assuming, well, we are always going to need Bond, so it's not even a question of whether MI6 is relevant anymore. And throughout the entire film, it's like an exploration of ways in which it is and isn't, you know, and even how we were talking about earlier, just in this conversation, of how it's the old school versus the new school, and how you can't really claim one is way better than the other because they both have weaknesses that the other can take advantage of. And so it's like maybe coming to the compromise of it needs to be a marriage between these two mentalities. And that's why having Silva attack the hearing of M, who's trying to, like, say, you need me and you need the double O's. You need all this shit because you have no idea who the fucking bad bad guys are. And as she says that, cops walk in and start shooting everybody. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, now she was, I don't know if she was supposed to be the prime minister that she was talking to, or she was a premier of some kind. I don't even know what the governmental ranks are over in the UK.
She's probably a member of parliament.
But like that chick was a fucking salty, bitter bitch. She was just like, well, blah, 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 blah. And then finally it had to be Ralph Fiennes. And that was where you still, now that you've tainted my image of him with, he could have been the mole. He could have been the mole this whole time. And I'm going like, nah, he's going to be a good, it's Ralph Fiennes.
It's
Ralph Fiennes. It's in his name. He's fine. When he was like, you know, just for argument's sake, maybe we should actually hear from the witness. And then, you know, Judi Dench has one of her three or four awesome monologues in the movie. And it's like the icing on the cake is as she finishes it, boom, it would almost make somebody possibly suspect that this was set up by M to make sure that her case went the way it went. Of course, the dying part probably was not part of that plan. Yeah. Now, there one thing, since we're talking about the differences between Bond and Silva and how they're sort of two sides of the same coin, there is a moment that of all the things that are sort of out of nowhere and catch you off guard in this film, during his initial capture, so like one of the Bond girls in the film serves the purpose solely of getting Bond to Silva. And right. She's Severine is paid back in death for that.
Yes, the William Tell moment.
And she was a tragic story for this film because it's like, you know, she's had a hard life. And even when he meets her, he's like, you know, you put on a good show, but I can tell that you're being controlled, you know, not protected by these bodyguards. And then she starts saying things like, what do you know about fear? What do you know about death? You know, and it's just like, wow, chick, you are on the edge.
You got dark quick. The very fragile smile she starts to give.
Oh, man, that's like the nervous smirk almost. Uh-huh. Yeah, and she's gorgeous. She's gorgeous with the makeup on, but she's even more beautiful the next time we see her when she's waiting for Bond on the boat. And you're just like, damn, you know, but it did feel like there's this person who just came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden Bond's sleeping with her, and then like the next scene she's dying. She literally has like a 5-minute lifespan in this film, and she I'm sure she was billed as the Bond girl for the film. So it's interesting how they had to balance that with you got the money penny, you got the Bond girl who's the cannon fodder, and then you've got M. And it keeps reinforcing how, like, ever since Vesper, this guy's fucked. He's never going to be able to have a normal relationship with a woman ever. Like, he's never going to find a second half.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? And so I think it's almost maybe a nod to that, where he has part of his interrogation by Silva starts to go down a path of sexual assault, or at least very, very awkward flirtation. And the only way that Bond disarms it is by saying to him, as he's kind of like rubbing his leg or unbuttoning the top button of his shirt, he's like, you know, what makes you think this is the first time? And that, like, Silva's instantly like reviled by it. He's just like,
you're getting as dirty as I am.
If I'm not going to be your first dick up the ass, I'm not doing this. Like, you actually saw that decision wipe across his face. You're like, well, then never mind about that plan. Like, all right, let's go back to, like, let's start looking up your files and tell you only got a 40% on your marksmanship. Holy shit. Like, M really fudged the numbers for Bond to go back into the field. Oh, jeez. And then ultimately, so that section, it's really like the movie, I guess, is kind of split right down the middle, where, like, the first half of the movie is about capturing Silva, and then the second half of the movie is them running from Silva to get us to the final battle. Right. And it did almost feel like if this were 20 years ago, they might have padded that first half a little bit more and made this two separate movies, you know?
Yeah, possibly.
But I like that it's like a compression. I like that this whole four-piece arc is a compression of, like, the entire life cycle of James Bond, from what I understand. I mean, I don't think he dies in the next one, but it does. The next one is where all the stuff from Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace and this one then combine for the mega reveal.
Absolutely.
So that was the only thing I think about Skyfall that I would complain about, is that I wanted a little bit more presence of this, like, sort of overarching evil organization that we've been getting hints of for the last two films. I feel like we kind of got away from that to go back to more of the darkness of Bond's past, as opposed to the fact that his affair from the first movie has all these further-reaching implications. But even without it, there were so many moments throughout this whole movie that I'm sitting here watching it going, oh, I get why everybody says this is the best one. Like, that, that whole sequence in China, when in Shanghai, when he's stalking the sniper, and it's all the all glass floor, all glass walls, and there's all these LCD screens outside on like, the walls of other buildings are giant LCD screens. And so he's kind of, like, walking through, and it's just being lit as if it was almost like a video game, but all you see is, like, the silhouettes. And when he finally has that fight with the sniper, it was, like, epic, because the camera wasn't moving. It just caught the whole fucking fight. The camera was framed that, like, the walls of the room were the sides of the shot, and that is it. And it was well done. So I'm going to echo some comments that our friend Ahmed made in a recorded message that he sent to me via our secret courier service to really play up that Sam Mendes kind of took the series to a new level when he picked up the directing reins for this film, and then he continues them in the next one. So that's what is really making me probably the most excited to finally be like, now I'm watching Spectre the right way. The way that article suggested. Watch the other... Like, the article was supposed to be, if you're not going to do a Bond binge like we're doing at the Hollow Nine Network, here are the details that you need to know going into Spectre so it makes sense. But now that I've watched all three movies, like, for the last month, pretty, like, intensely, I'm kind of like... ready. I want to be Spectre. I want the octopus arms. God damn it.
There you go.
Anything that stood out to you that you can remember, that you recall, that, like, when someone mentions Skyfall, maybe this is the first image of the film that pops into your mind, or the first thing about it that you remember? Like, when I told you we were going to be doing the Bond binge and that we were going to get to Skyfall, was there anything that you were excited about?
It's that Scottish manor fight. I mean, just it's that, like, it's the climatic fight there where it just everything comes together.
Yeah,
that's what stands out. And I mean, and also it also for me even more so than Casino Royale or even Quantum was like was very much the passing of the torch.
Yeah,
I mean, you had Judi Dench finally passing on the role of M. You have Moneypenny coming in. You have the new Q, which all of that felt like it was like, okay, yeah, now we're really getting all the elements of classic Bond into the one movie. You didn't quite have for either Casino or Quantum.
Yeah, it was what made those two feel much more like these post-2000 reboot of Bond, and now it's almost like, oh, maybe they were more like prequels to a continuation of the serious story of Bond. You know,
right, exactly.
And so. And then Skyfall, this one and Spectre are the two that were not based on any Bond pre-existing Ian Fleming properties, right? Like, these are completely original stories that were written for the film Bond universe. Yep.
Exactly.
I mean, for you could tell that they're paying homage, but I think they do an excellent job. It's kind of like, maybe we should retcon. You know, maybe this should just become the story. This is what it is from now on. At least I think in the film world it will be, because with the recent debacle our country is going through, there was immediately a mention of a new Bond villain being created that was basically going to be an analog of Trump that, like, Bond was going to have to, like, defeat to save the free world. And I was like,
oh, no.
I was like, well, just do it right, guys. Don't fuck that up.
Yeah.
Do that.
See how that goes.
Get Sam Mendes, get Paul Haggis back in here. You know what I mean? Like, let's do this shit the right way. In fact, I mean, no, I was trying to think, like, I almost feel like the way this film, especially the way this film was, but these recent the Craig Bond films, it's almost like you got to be very careful who you would even consider to direct another installment in this, because after Mendes the bar is really high. I mean, I think Casino Royale was epic, and that was Martin Campbell, who was a veteran Bond director, but it just felt like it had this freshness to it. And Sam Mendes brought that same level of freshness.
And they lost the jitter cam.
Yeah, yeah. And
fucking God.
And that was what Quantum's, like, probably aside from all of its weaknesses, there was the technical fact that they, like, really fucked up a lot of the action by shaking that camera. And I think that's why I said they'll fight with the sniper in Shanghai. Like,
oh, yeah.
There you go. Two guys doing all this crazy choreographed kung fu, and the camera just watches it. So you can see the whole thing. Because you know what? The backdrop is a giant fucking blue jellyfish that's just floating across an LCD screen. So you don't even know where this shit is happening. It's like there are giant monsters flying around while Bond is like killing this guy who kicked the shit out of him in the beginning of the movie. So it's kind of like a high point for that film also.
Absolutely.
Well then, I guess we have our marching orders. We have to go and find the final chapter. We must see Spectre. We must.
Yes,
we must complete the series here.
Anyway,
all right. Well, thank you very much for meeting me. And of course, you know, watch your back. Don't accidentally get stung by the scorpion when you go do the shot over there. I mean, that restaurant, they're just like, yeah, people die here all the time.
Like, well, whatever you do, if you're ordering the snake venom, it actually is snake venom.
Oh, shit. Wow. Yeah, that's good to know. Because we were going to do that later. They were talking about that. It's like one of their big things.
Yeah.
All right, well, until next time, I will continue to be Dave the Clone.
And Gomez Not Adams.
And this has been Skyfall. You've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, FangirlZone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow Knight.